Welcome to the Hashtag Health Podcast. My name is Larissa Lorangano. I'm a second-year medical student at the Schulich School of Medicine at Western University. This is the second part of a two-episode series. We are speaking with Dr. Kristen Shoesmith, a physician scientist at London Health Sciences Center who cares for people with ALS. Today's topic centers on advanced care planning and research. We'll learn more about the difficult conversations that patients with ALS and their families have with treatment teams, what it means to provide medical assistance in dying, or MAID, for this population, and how research is making the future of ALS care more promising. In 2016, the Supreme Court of Canada legalized MAID in Canada. If people with ALS wished, they could be evaluated by two healthcare providers to determine their eligibility for MAID. Since the Supreme Court ruling, ALS is the most common neurological condition for which an individual received MAID. The decision to access MAID is part of a broader conversation about advanced care planning. Individuals with ALS may choose palliative home care or more invasive measures like mechanical ventilation. In addition, patients may decide to participate in placebo-controlled trials to improve the future of ALS treatment. We'll continue our conversation with Dr. Shoesmith about these topics now. So the next question is about medical assistance in dying or MAID, which I realize can be kind of a whole podcast episode or multiple podcast episodes on its own. But I wanted to touch on it a little bit just because the first person to receive a physician-assisted death with MAID had ALS. So if you could, and I know that this was something that you mentioned happened kind of during the course of your practice and really brought on a lot of changes in ALS care and a lot more choices that your patients kind of had to make or had available to them. So how did the introduction of MAID change end-of-life care for ALS patients specifically?
So one of the things that I've had conversations with my patients all along is that I want them to be the master of their journey. I want them to make decisions about how long they live and what interventions that they accept. And the introduction of MAID has allowed them to be in complete control of their journey with ALS. So if they decide that they are suffering and that their quality of life has significantly been impacted and they don't see the value in continuing to live because of the amount of suffering they are experiencing, they have the option of MAID. The hardest patients that I treated were those patients prior to MAID being legal who had bibrachial ALS. So I had a couple of patients who had no function of their arms, essentially no function at all, and they wanted to live independently. Well, patients who have no function of their arms, so cannot open doors, cannot feed themselves, cannot dress themselves. It's virtually impossible for them to live on their own unless they have the finances to provide for care outside of what the province is able to support in their home. And I've had a number of those patients prior to MAID talking about suicide, telling me their plans for how they would kill themselves. So MAID gives individuals who are fully dependent on others the capacity and ability to decide on their journey. So I did not have to have these suicide conversations with patients anymore. Not that I could have advocated suicide because we were not able to advocate suicide. But medical assistance in dying gave the patients the control back that they needed. In this disease, they are losing control over their bodies, losing control of their speech, their arms, their legs, but having control over their destiny is so important to so many of these patients. Now, not all of my patients choose it. I should actually know the percentages, and I don't know the percentages, but I would estimate probably about a third of patients choose MAID in of the patients that I treat. And I really feel that the option of MAID empowers them. It empowers them to choose their destiny, to choose their end of their journey. And that ability to decide when their suffering will end with this disease is really important for these patients. So I support their decision because I want them to have the control. I want them to choose it should they desire. Should they not wish to have MAID, I would absolutely support palliative care for these patients whenever they choose to make sure that, again, their journey looks like it's the way they want it to look. And I attribute my supportive mate, and for those that are listening, I do provide, I am a provider of MAID for my patients, and I do assessments of MAID for my patients all the time, because I am a proponent of the patient having their own decision-making in this disease. Family doctors talk about caring for their patients from cradle to grave. So as an ALS neurologist, I do it a little bit shorter, and I say from the diagnosis to grave, I care for these patients. And I think being that physician who cares for them the entire journey is so important in your therapeutic relationship with the patient as well. I will tell you that not all patients believe that or know that I support MAID, because often when they bring up these conversations in the room, they're bringing up very timidly, not knowing what my angle is on MAID and whether or not I support it. And once I tell them I support whatever choice you have, and I'm open to having any of these conversations, it's amazing how that relationship improves. And when I offer them, yes, we will support your decision, yes, we'll support your journey, that really gives them that power back. And I think that power of control over their journey is so important to these patients.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful thing for the patient. It must provide kind of some reassurance that you'll be there kind of supporting them, whether they decide to have a more kind of palliative end or to pursue MAID. And yeah, I can really see and really like kind of what you said about allowing them to be the master of their journey, the author kind of to their own story, however you want to phrase it. It's for some people, I'm sure, having that kind of power and control returned to them, and letting them kind of decide what they want the end to look like, can give them that last kind of bit of hope and bit of kind of security in the end stages. So yeah, thank you for your answer. I know that it is a very challenging thing to talk about, and like you kind of alluded to, people have kind of varying opinions and varying comfort levels with MAID. So yeah, it's great to kind of hear about your own kind of personal perspective. So what are some common challenges that your patients and their families face when discussing kind of advanced care planning? We talked about kind of those interventions, but is there anything else that you'd kind of add in terms of the advanced care planning, or whether maybe to go the palliative kind of path versus opt for MAID?
I think what's important in this question is that it's a journey. So a patient cannot make these decisions in a 30-minute session with a physician or a team member. So it's often introducing the topic of advanced care planning and giving them homework to do on their return meeting with us. And sometimes we know in advance that these are going to be very challenging conversations for that individual patient or that family unit. And if we can anticipate it's going to be a challenging decision making for that patient, we often will employ the services of the palliative care team. And the palliative care team isn't separate from the ALS clinic. So how we envision ourselves is that we are a team that, again, works together. So we use the palliative care team in the communities, usually, to help support these patients. So we'll often have the conversation started in the clinic, and then we will ask the home palliative care team, so the home-based palliative care team, to go in to see the family and the patient at a time later to continue the conversation about advanced care planning. And that team work between both our clinic staff as well as the palliative care team in the home really helps support the patient and their family in that decision journey, because it is difficult. Some patients really struggle with these decision-making challenges, and having that two-pronged approach with the ALS team, but also a palliative care team that is used to having these conversations all the time with patients, really helps. And then the palliative care team can also explain how they can support the patient in their home journey as well. So it's one thing I have not mentioned, but as a patient is progressing towards end of life, so meaning if we notice a patient has substantial symptoms that we're having difficulties managing, or we predict that the patient only has months left to live, we will always consult the home palliative care to support the patient in their home journey.
Mm-hmm. It's great that you guys work so closely with them. And that a community palliative care team exists, because I know a lot of people prefer to kind of be in their home, and that's kind of where they're most comfortable. So, not being able to kind of spend your last few months in a comfortable place with those that you love, I think it is really a priority for a lot of people. And, of course, the palliative care team, we've heard from our conversations with them, work wonders in terms of really trying to return as much quality of life and comfort as possible. So switching gears once again, I wanted to talk about your research interests, because I know that aside from kind of being very involved, obviously, in the ALS clinic, you have a lot going on with clinical research. So do you want to tell us a little bit maybe about what you're working on kind of currently?
So at our clinic, we participated in many clinical trials looking at new experimental therapies in ALS. And we are one of three main sites across the province that does clinical trials, although there are five ALS clinics across the province. Most of the clinical trials are run at three sites, although the smaller clinical trials are run at all five sites. So at any point in time, we can have anywhere from five clinical trials running to one clinical trial running. So that is nice, because when I started in the ALS clinics, so certainly over the last 17 years of me being involved in ALS care, there have been years where we have no clinical trials. And that's actually quite disheartening to patients when there's no research that they can be involved in at any time. Versus now, there's actually many clinical trials and many research projects that they can be involved in, which gives patients hope. It also gives them the opportunity to give back as well. So most of the clinical trials we run in ALS are placebo-controlled trials. Sometimes it's 50-50, so 50% on placebo, 50% on treatment. Most of them, though, are about a third on placebo and two-thirds on active treatment. That's a more standard ratio. So a patient entering into a clinical trial may be receiving a placebo rather than the experimental therapy. But I encourage patients to not think negatively about the possibility of them being involved in the placebo arm, because research shows us that any patient that's involved in a clinical trial, regardless of whether or not they're on the placebo arm versus the clinical trial arm, will improve. So outcomes are always better if you're involved in a clinical trial than if you're not, probably because the placebo effect is a real thing. And your drive to do better, the neurotransmitter changes that happen in your brain when you hope that you're on the active treatment, truly impact the disease course. And the other thing that clinical trials offer is that you see us frequently. So you come and see the nurse who works with me, myself, and the research coordinator, sometimes as often as every month or every 2 months. So you're being seen more frequently, so we can make interventions more often too. So if they're having a symptom, we can do a prescription for that symptom that they're having. So there's more immediate interventions that happen. So it's definitely a positive impact. And I think a lot of people gain a lot of value out of being in a clinical trial. So I sell clinical trials by telling them that this is the way to get the fastest access to experimental therapy, and this may make a positive impact in your disease. But even if you're in a clinical trial that's on the placebo side of things, the outcome is always better than if you're not in a clinical trial. So that's another way we sell it. I find that people who are in clinical trials always are very positive with their thinking. They like giving back, and they know that their involvement is going to make a difference to the generations of patients with ALS that are coming after them. So they are definitely doing it for their own benefit, but also for the benefit of those patients that are coming after them. So I really appreciate their involvement and always thank them each time that they come, because their involvement is definitely making a difference for others that are living with this disease. What excites me about ALS research? So the fact that currently we have so many different clinical potential treatments on the horizon for ALS is very exciting. So I really feel in my career, we are going to make a huge difference with regards to the prognosis with this disease. What's most exciting on the horizon is some of the genetic forms of ALS. We are close to having really effective therapies that may even delay or even prevent the onset of ALS in patients who are carrying genes that will cause ALS in their DNA. So some of the treatments really are looking like they may prevent or at least substantially delay the onset of ALS development, which is super exciting. I think the future of ALS is going to be a cocktail of medications that we give to hit the disease at different mechanisms. And with personalized medicine with regards to the DNA components, so that we can really make a difference with this disease. So the future is bright. Absolutely, the future is bright. And we're going to hugely make a difference with this disease going forward.
Thank you for listening. I hope that you enjoyed this episode of Hashtag Health, the second in our series about ALS. We hope that you'll tune in to future episodes where medical students and experts will continue to discuss the struggles, innovation, and stories that shape our healthcare system.